Ginny Clark, welcome. Ginny has over 35 years of management experience in executive recruiting, talent management, and financial services. She has been in the trenches and the boardrooms. She was a partner at the executive search firm Spencer Stuart, where she recruited senior leaders across sectors and functions. And she served as director of executive recruiting at Google, where her scope included diversity recruiting and internal mobility. Ginny is a conscious leadership expert, sought-after speaker, author, executive coach, and advisor who inspires workers, whether in leadership roles or not, to answer to a higher power. And I'm really eager to get into that last notion. More on that in just a bit. Ginny, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy Even in Crisis. Hi, Ginny.
How are you doing, Andy? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here. So we had a chance to talk last week, and it's just been a pleasure to getting to know you. And thank you for doing this interview with me as part of this summit. Let me start with this, and I hope you'll understand the reason I'm asking this. You are as confident, bright, experienced, knowledgeable, and devoted to your work as anyone could be. Yet you too are a victim of workplace bullying and aggression. How did that happen to someone like you?
Thank you for putting it that way. I'm pretty tough broad.
I would have preferred to say that, but I may not have sounded as good coming from me. But yes, that's what I mean. How did that happen? Look at you and you hear your talk and you're so authoritative. So again, how does somebody like you, a tough broad, get bullied at work?
It was quite insidious, and it took me a minute to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
It was gaslighting. There are many forms of bullying, and you're talking about them throughout this summit. But the gaslighting can be, you know the origin of that. It was a movie, you probably know. It was a movie in the 40s.
Yes.
Where a man was trying to drive his wife crazy by messing around with the gaslight and leading her to believe that she was losing her mind, right?
Yep.
And so this was happening to me, and it started with some simple sort of innocuous sounding references like, you know, you're a little too corporate. What? Because this was someone who was more senior than I was and reported to indirectly. And I kind of thought, well, that's too corporate. I mean, this person's background was not unlike mine. But he was suggesting that corporate was derogatory.
So when the bullying happened to you, you were at a senior level.
I was, yes. And the bully was more senior than I was. And so my expectation was completely, it never dawned on me that someone who was more senior would somehow try to gaslight me. And I pretty quickly, because I've been an executive recruiter for so long, I see into people, and I think it was the case that this person felt very threatened by me because I kind of have x-ray vision. Now, I was not stupid enough to say anything, but yeah. I was observing him and how he interacted with people, including me, and this little gaslighting, these insidious little comments he would drop periodically.
Yeah, and can you be a little more specific? What was his attitude? What did he say?
Oh, it initially, and this happened over months. It wasn't immediate. It was, I think, very conscious and deliberate. This is a highly intelligent person. And I would also, in my observation, I'm not a therapist, I would guess that this person was also considered narcissistic.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty clear to me that they felt seen. In a negative way. They felt exposed in my presence. Again, I know not to say anything. I'm not going to try to incite this person. But, you're a little too corporate. Are you sure you want to do it that way? Just doubting, questioning. You know, we don't really do this that way. Little things like that. And I'm thinking, dude, you hired me. And the manager in between us had said, oh, great hire. Right? About me. So that he had said that about me.
Yeah.
Thinking, what is this really about? But it became a real problem over the course of a couple of years. And I finally, and it was showing up in ways that my performance evaluations, I didn't think were in keeping with my contributions and my ratings and my compensation, right?
And how did that affect you, Ginny, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I was angry. But again, I tried to go through the, talk to my manager, talk to, you know, you try to toe the line and you can't just attack people and accuse them when you don't have proof. But I was sophisticated enough to understand what was going on.
And they're usually pretty smart the way they do it. They don't leave a trace very much.
Absolutely
right?
Not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I finally just got really fed up and there was I actually looked for another opportunity and I had an offer that frankly, I wasn't convinced that I wanted to take, but I thought, let me just see, because I was told how valuable I was by other people, everybody else. Right. And so I went to my manager and he was like, oh my God. Oh no, we can't lose you. Let me go to this person and see what they say. And they said, we're not going to counteroffer.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, all right. I said, I would love to have a conversation with this person to understand, because they didn't talk to me directly. So I was granted
that. It's another challenging thing. It seems like the bully often, in my experience too, can tell them, they bully you, but they'll never talk to you. They'll never try to get to know you. They'll never try to understand why you're operating the way you are. They'll never try to work with you.
No, they already know what they want to do. They don't care about
anything.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. You are a target.
Yes.
And you are a threat, usually.
100%. Yeah.
So I behaved myself in the least threatening way possible.
Yeah.
It's hard because I'm 6 feet tall. I'm, you know, people have said I'm intimidating. That's never what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
But I'm a collaborator and I had a great reputation. So none of this made any sense. So no counteroffer. We have a conversation and this person is just very aloof, feeling empowered. And frankly, I kind of regret that I didn't just record the conversation.
Yeah.
But he said something that I thought was just so inappropriate that, and I won't repeat it, but it was not of a sexual nature or anything like that.
Okay.
So inappropriate. And mind you, one of the areas I've had responsibility for in my career is diversity.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with the laws surrounding protected classes, all of those kinds of things. So in any event, I got off the call and I thought I'm not letting this slide. So I went to his boss. I escalated.
You did.
Yeah.
That was very brave.
Well, again, I was at a stage in my career where, you know what, I not to be cavalier, but I care more about finding some justice than staying employed.
Yeah. Good for you.
I did. That was that I have the you know, the privilege of that flexibility. I was told that there would be an investigation. There was. It took a couple months. And they came back and found that I wasn't the only one, that there was a pattern with a couple of other people. Now, I hadn't tried to triangulate that. That wasn't for me to do, but I wasn't the least bit surprised. So eventually that person left before I did. And, you know, there was justice.
So because of you, they got rid of him?
Yeah, as far as I know. Wow. And the other people who had to endure similar kinds of treatment.
And how long did you stay in the role, or did you leave on your own at that point?
I left on my own. I left maybe a year later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so did it affect you emotionally or physically or both? Or did you just get angry?
No, it did. It did in very insidious ways. And I've worked with a healer. I call him my guru, who's also a trained therapist. And so we were miles apart, but I would still talk to him remotely.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, this is real. This is, you have to acknowledge you're tough. I get it. You're handling it. But there's I keep using the word insidious because it so is. You don't even realize sometimes the toll that it's taking on your psyche.
Yeah.
No matter how resilient and strong you are, you don't.
Yeah.
And you helped me kind of talk through some of those aspects of, I wasn't doubting myself. I was certainly angry and resentful, not just at the individual, but at the organization for allowing an individual like this to stay. Now, you know, this is where you get these people that are, the narcissists in particular, I think are so adept that very often they know how to manage up. So no one, I think, had a clue that this individual was treating people this way.
Yep. I've seen that so often. And it's all of those things. The person is so adept at knowing, although they might've picked the wrong person in you, but so many of us, I was bullied in my years in television production in New York. And I think that I believe that my bullies were very much narcissists. They may have even enjoyed the power that they had. I think they did.
Oh, for sure.
And it was the kind of thing where so many of us aren't as strong-minded as you. And I'm not a shy person, but instead of getting angry and trying to fight the bully, in some cases I didn't have an HR department to go to and it wouldn't have worked anyway. I just said, I'm going to go back to my desk, work harder, work better, and show the person that I deserve their appreciation, admiration, even love. And of course, that's a losing proposition in most cases.
Always.
And, you know, the book I've written is called I Thought It Would Be Different, because with every job, I thought, okay, this time it'll be different. And of course, I acted the same way. And the bullies can often smell you.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, and they're experienced at it. They spend a lot of time at it, kissing up and all this stuff. And I'm just like, well, I'm going to focus on my work. That's what I need to do. So anyway, having said that, you used an interesting word, I thought, that you had the privilege, you know, to act on it and to care more about justice than the job. Well, I will be happy to acknowledge my privilege as a white male and having many advantages during my career that others didn't. And it's interesting that you would use the word privilege in your circumstance. But having said that, in your work and in your professional life, and the point I want to make here is that anybody can be bullied. You could be at a top level. You could work in HR. You could be brand new at the job. You could be any color, gender, LGBTQI. And that's why, for me, this issue is so important, because it does cross all kinds of socioeconomic lines. We're all targets in the wrong experience, in the wrong environment. Is that what you found?
Oh, for sure. I'm guessing that there are statistics out there that would suggest that those from lower, because as you were saying, you know, these folks target individuals that they think might have a weakness somewhere.
Yeah.
My weakness was rank in this situation. It wasn't anything in my character, in my socioeconomic background. My race, I don't think mattered. I don't think it mattered in this situation.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I couldn't get in his head on that one.
Right.
But I think that people from underrepresented backgrounds, including neurodiverse individuals,
yes,
are probably more prone to this kind of treatment.
But at least, and you may argue fairly, there are some civil rights laws that cover some of these things, although I think it's impossible to prove a case unless the bully, if you will, is just so out of his or her mind that they're using words like, hey, old man, get out of the workplace, or
right,
or they use the N-word or some horrific thing, then you have a case. It's hard to prove these things. So let me ask this, because I think this goes into a lot of your work philosophy, which I want to get into, Jenny.
Yeah.
In your work, you talk a lot about what's missing in our workplaces today. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there are a few things, Andy. For purpose of this discussion, and I'm going to sort of give two. There are several, but I'm going to start with one that is rarely talked about, and that's love.
Oh, go to it. Okay, I have something to say about that. Please, you're the expert.
Love. You know, I would tell my team, I love you guys.
Yeah.
Love is the most powerful force in the universe. And when there's love in your heart, That's what allows you to care about someone else. When you care, you can build teams. You become a better leader. The number one reason that people leave, according to a McKinsey study, is a lack of career development advancement. The number three reason is uncaring or uninspiring leaders. And to me, when I read that, I just thought, how can a leader ever be even selected knowing that they don't care about people? Which takes me to another situation, condition that I think is rampant. And that is a level of accountability, having an infrastructure that supports the workforce, that supports your people. So people should expect to be protected. They're working in psychologically safe, physically safe environments.
Yeah.
And those things need to be there. HR has a terrible reputation in general. Whenever I mention HR and some social media, people are like, they suck. They're only out for the, you know, and I say to people, then tell, what is your solution then? I mean, we can go get a lawyer. Not everybody can afford that.
Yeah.
Got to start somewhere because there should be. And this is why I want to see more activism inside of organizations. I want people to feel like they have ownership and agency in calling out bad behavior at all levels. Because if not, who will?
Right. And so let me ask this, why then? And it almost goes to something that I think we may have discussed briefly when we first met, which is this notion of you're a leader of people.
People.
And in my experience, I never worked better. I might have tried to work even harder. I was already working pretty hard, I would say. But it never made me work better. I never became more loyal and devoted to the job because someone was being mean-spirited or unappreciative.
Absolutely.
Of my effort. And so you know, I'm advocating, and I think many of us are advocating for some kind of, and this is your expertise. When you're in recruitment, shouldn't they have people sign something when they sign their contract or they sign their agreement that they have to abide by certain, you know, bylaws of behavior, like I'm going to treat people with respect. I'm, you know, and the language can be figured out, but shouldn't they know before they start that this is something that's crucially important? And almost no companies have that. And let me just add one other point, and then I'd love for you to expound on it. It almost reminds me in a silly way of like high school driver's ed or sex ed, where they might teach you kind of the mechanics of everything, you know, how to steer and what constitutes, you know, how to have a baby, but they don't teach you how to treat another person with dignity and integrity and compassion, which should be a part of sex education, in my view. Don't teach you how to fill the gas tank and change a tire, at least not in my driver's ed class. And here they have people that are in charge of not just people, but of moving the company forward. And in my experience, 25 years in television, I had two bosses, each for only a year, that I felt had compassion and appreciation for the people that they were managing. So to you, I say, what do you think?
Inexcusable that's happening. And I have worked for a couple of companies who did have you actually sign some of these things.
And did it matter? Did it actually have impact?
I would say yes.
Okay.
And one of those places was the search firm where I worked. And when a colleague said something that I thought was questionable, I took it to the head of the office. And he initially wasn't even going to tell him who it was. But he said, no, I want to know. And I told him, he kind of went, oh. And I'm like, wait, oh, what? Okay. Because this is this thing that we did sign, right? And I'm not just the diversity person. I'm not just the only Black woman in this office. Yeah. But this is what we said we stand for. So what are you going to do? What can I expect from you?
Yeah.
And he did approach the person. He handled it.
But there was some hesitation, it seems. Like there's so much hesitation.
There was hesitation because this was big biller. And, you know,
yeah.
Trust me, I was prepared to approach the person myself.
Everybody's afraid of the bully. Everybody's afraid of the bully, mostly because it's either the CEO, and you have a right to be scared of the top person who signs your checks and has your self-esteem, your popularity in the company, your ability to pay your bills, your ability to enjoy your time off. Your boss all have that power over you.
And can retaliate, for sure.
And so... So it sounds, the quick story, I don't know if you're a basketball fan or sports fan or played basketball.
To some degree.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I was Bob Knight, who was a very famous basketball coach, college basketball coach, for many, many years, won multiple national championships. And he was, during the 70s and 80s, probably the most famous and infamous bully in sports and in America. And I was his executive producer on a television show. He was 70 years old at this time, and everybody was still afraid of him. At 70 years old, everybody did just what he said. And I talk about it in my book, but people are afraid of the bully, as I was.
Yeah.
And even here, in a circumstance where you're telling somebody, and it sounded like they were hoping you'd say, well, let's wait at least one more time and see what happens.
No. And I had already established with this leader some of my boundaries. So he was pretty clear that when it came to some things, I mean, again, I'm collaborative, all of that, but I'm not going to be disrespected. That's what it came down to.
Right. And so you work in your consulting, coaching, and so forth in your business with leaders as well as staff members, if that's the right term.
And aspiring leaders. Yeah.
Of course, aspiring leaders. So, and I think you even talk about it in terms of the 5% who are upper management and then 95% who are
everybody else.
And everybody else. Fair enough. And so you also have a very interesting concept, and I want to make sure we had time for this, which, as I recall, you call it the five dimensions of conscious leadership.
Yeah.
What is that, and how do you spread that gospel?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember exactly how it started. A colleague of mine, when I was at Google, said we should do a podcast on leadership. It was another recruiter. Mm-hmm. And so we put it together. We kind of came up with the idea, and then we needed a title. I have always, well, for the last 30 plus years, I've been on a very deliberate spiritual journey with the help of this guru that I referenced. And it started after my father passed away in the early 90s. He was older when my brother and I were born. And so that defining moment kind of jolted me into wanting to explore something that would give me comfort, perspective, fortification, all of that. And so I started working with this individual and read a ton of books on metaphysics, spirituality. I meditate every day still. And part of it came when I did join Spencer Stuart. All these things had happened. My mother passed away a month after I started there. I had a young son. I went through a divorce. And so it was a tough time. And I decided I'm not going to try to just be spiritual when I'm at home. This needs to be integrated and be part of who I am. I don't need to talk about it. I don't need to avoid talking about it either.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to convert anybody into my belief system, but it's part of who I am. And so that's what I brought into this idea of the podcast and came up with fifth dimensional leadership, because the fifth dimension is where it's unity consciousness. It's love-based, as I mentioned that word before, right? And so that was the genesis of the reference. And then I thought, well, let me describe five dynamics, characteristics that to me make up a strong leader. And because the leadership starts from the inside, it's the who you are, not just what you do. And as a recruiter, we're so focused on what you do, but I always was looking inside. I had that x-ray vision, and I was always trying to assess, is this person? And I would ask those other questions.
Good for you.
So the five dimensions are: know yourself, speak your truth, inspire love, expand consciousness, and activate mastery. Those are the five. And it's, you never stop. You do that. It's a spiral and you just keep getting better and higher and better for yourself. And ultimately that accrues to the benefit of others.
Yeah. I love that. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the inspiring love, because so much of the tension at work is because you feel like the boss or supervisor doesn't care about you. We talked about this earlier, and doesn't love you. And let me ask also from the targets, the bully target standpoint, or just the staff person side of it. I'll tell you an interesting quick story, which is I talked to a woman who said that she had a terribly dysfunctional family. So when she got into the workforce as an adult, she was looking for this kind of second chance family, right? Because she's spending, like we all do, we spend a lot of time at work, and it begins to be a second chance family. Now, it also may be more dysfunctional than what you grew up with. I grew up with a completely functional family, loving, adoring, caring. Yeah. And so when I got to the workforce, I thought, okay, I was a really good son. I did all the right things. You know, I didn't get in trouble. So I thought, if I just work to be a good employee, I'll get that same adoration back that I got. And so we both came to the same place. She from a dysfunctional family, me from a functional family. But then when we got to the workforce, we were both looking for love in all the wrong places. Yeah. So how does this notion of love, is it okay to kind of be working hard and hoping that the boss loves us? Because I felt very ashamed that throughout my career, I was so kind of needy, I guess. So how does the love thing play back and forth?
It starts with self-love.
Okay.
So that's why the first one is know yourself. Who are you? As defined by you, not by other people. What are the, I taught a course on this. I'll be offering some more courses soon. But in it, we really talk in terms of what has been prescribed to you by others and what have you subscribed to in terms of your beliefs.
Yeah.
So let's figure out who you actually are today, right now.
Yeah.
Who you're letting aspects of the old you that you want to let go of. And the second one is speak your truth. Speaking carries energy. Words carry energy. And you hearing yourself say something, affirm that mindset, that truth for you.
Yeah.
And so those are the two that need to be in place before you get to the inspire love, because we're starting with love yourself for us.
That resonates so much with me. I am Jewish, but I've been studying Hinduism. And again, not trying to proselytize to anyone. I'm just learning and I'm interested in other religions. But so much of the teaching of Hinduism is about starting with the self, getting rid of that ego and finding joy and contentment in yourself so then you can provide it to others. And that's where I think, again, I'm still working on my own self-blame, but whenever the boss was mean-spirited, I was working so hard, I think I was doing really well, great ratings for the shows I create and so forth, but then I took it so personally and felt so damaged by it as opposed to focusing on myself. I took everything personally. So I think what you're teaching, this kind of self-love thing, is so important both for the manager or the boss, but also the staffer as well.
Right. That's right. So you're not looking necessarily for validation you want your work to be of high quality. You want feedback on that.
Yeah.
But you as an individual have a choice now. Are you going to, like you just said, I took it personally, meaning you internalized that.
I sure did.
If you love yourself, you can choose, do I need to internalize this? Or is this something that is a set of activities for which I take responsibility, but the language and the way that this person is treating me, I don't need to accept as being directed at me and who I am.
Yeah. And who I am. And so I want to get to another quote, which is, again, all leading to these issues that you're so perceptive on. And forgive me, I'm learning so much. So I hope this isn't my own recruiting or therapy session, but I'm learning so much. You also said conscious leadership is about leading from the soul, not the ego. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about. But from a practical standpoint, how does one lead from the soul?
You do these things to get to know yourself. And then you lead with empathy. You're not leading. Your leaders aren't, and this is, I'm borrowing from a one of the podcast guests that I had. I'm forgetting his name at the moment. He wrote a book called Attributes, a former Navy SEAL.
Uh-huh.
And he says, you don't call yourself a leader. Other people will call a leader.
Yeah.
Right? It's like calling yourself funny or handsome. Other people will do that if you actually are.
Right.
So being in the role doesn't make you a leader. Leading is about, to me, it's about setting vision. It's having integrity. It's telling the truth. It's being kind. Not nice, but kind.
Yeah.
I make a distinction. We can talk about that. But those are the elements of a true leader. My father was an amazing leader. I learned that when he, you know, later in life, I realized, but I got to observe him as a child. He was a prison warden.
Mm.
I would go to visit him at work. And he earned respect from the inmates, from the staff, from the community. He earned it. He didn't demand it. Anytime you see someone who's making demands and getting in your face, they're fear-based. They're operating from that place of, I need this title and these trappings to make you believe that I have power over you. My attitude is, I'm the only one who has power over me.
Yeah.
I am. And so when we can get one another to feel that way, I can't say you're impervious because it can still happen to you, but at least you don't have to be damaged. That's my hope.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting. Your father must have been an amazing man, because if you're a prison warden, you have more power over people than almost anybody in our society.
Right.
I think judges have so much power, not just to sentence, but in their courtroom, nobody can tell them anything. They have almost complete and utter autonomy. I created a television show with a sheriff who ran that jail in North Carolina. And it was really interesting. I made him the host, and the inmates were the guests and the audience. But I learned so much that, and it sounds like your father never used that power for something negative. And he certainly could have as a prison warden. You've seen a lot of popular culture and elsewhere. That was the amazing thing. But in my case, the sheriff certainly loved his power. I don't know that he abused it. I wouldn't say that. But he certainly loved it and carried himself that way. And so I think one of the most impressive things is when you have power and you use it for kindness and not to abuse people. I was Johnny Cochran, you know, O.J. Simpson's lawyer. I was his producer. I did television shows with him. He was the opposite. He had so much power. He had money, authority, and he was nice to everybody. And I love to tell that story because Johnny's passed away. A lot of people never had the opportunity to know him. And I love to let people know that he was one of the few people I came across in my career who was nice to everybody because he had the power to be so.
And the confidence.
Yes, absolutely.
Confidence. It's like, I know who I am. It doesn't cost me anything to be kind to you. And it might even make your day.
Yeah. And he did. Johnny Cochran made everybody's day, whether he was walking on the streets, he'd walk into our office, say hello to everybody. And we all waited for him to come in because he made us feel good because he was Johnny Cochran and he could have worked. So amazing. Real quick, if you can give me a brief answer, we need to finish up here, Ginny, and this has just been terrific. Can you tell me, with all the companies you're working with and all the people you're working with, are you finding in your work that either after you work with them, or are you seeing a little bit more where companies, organizations are prioritizing the well-being of their individuals to the betterment of the organization, or are we still got a long way to go here?
I think we've got a long way to go, I'll be honest. And I think we're distracted right now by technology, AI, all these things. Everybody is. Workers are thinking, oh, am I going to be compromised? It's, you know, but I just spoke to a group of a software company that their board, advisory board. And part of what I said to them was, you really need to focus before that's all going to happen. Regardless, I'm not saying ignore it.
Yeah.
But come back and focus on your infrastructure. What are you doing to support your people? Right. What's in place to really support this tool. It's a tool.
Yeah.
So I stand firm with the whole idea of having processes, having a level of accountability all the way up the food chain, and making sure that you do have the well-being of your team members in mind, because people can lead. Yeah. Word spreads.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. We need more of it and more of the kind of thing that you're bringing to it. So, Ginny, thank you so much for this important and enlightening conversation. Ginny, how can people contact you for more information?
Yeah, the easiest way is through my website. It's ginnyclarke.com, GINNYCLARKE.com.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
Bully targets and those of us in toxic work environments, let's all aim to change the workplace for good. Final word from me. Thank you so much, Ginny. Thank you all for watching and listening.